Welcome to Kadampa Podcasts. These podcasts offer practical solutions to daily challenges and help guide us to a happier and more peaceful state of mind. In each episode, you will find an extract from a teaching given by one of various Kadampa Buddhist teachers worldwide. All these teachings are inspired by the profound wisdom of Venerable Geshe Kalsang Gyatso Rinpoche, a Buddhist master for our time. We hope you will enjoy listening.
I'm always kind of amazed at how calm it can be down here, even in the middle of the city. And I feel like it's just a perfect analogy for ourself, that we can carry this kind of calm center with us, no matter where we are and what we're doing. Sometimes it's easier, sometimes it's more difficult, but we do have this ability to kind of carry the experience that we have of this place kind of inside us wherever we go at any time, that we have this core, or we can find this center where we feel balanced, we feel peaceful, we feel happy, we feel open, you know, even if everything's swirling around us, we can still hold that experience ourselves. Probably from the meditation and any of our meditations, even if we've been meditating for a long time, we become aware that the mind does wander, kind of follows this thought or that thought, and follows a certain memory. We can hear a sound, and we can go to that. We can get a sensation in the body. We can go to that. We can think about something that maybe we're planning for or anxious about. Our mind goes to that. So in a meditation, we have what we call the object of the meditation, the main focus. But with working with that main focus or object, the mind goes here and there and here and there. And this is a really, really good experience because it shows us what we're working with. In fact, you know, meditation practice is a mind training. It's a mind training practice. And we need to know or see in our own experience what we're working with, what we're training. You know, we're training this, but we're training in inner peace. We're training in positive thoughts. We're training in ways of thinking, viewing ourselves, others in the world that are meaningful and spiritually constructive, spiritually positive. You know, we're training in this, but we're working with the distractions. We're working with these minds that are taking us away from our inner peace or from the focus of our training, the focus of our meditation. So we gradually become more aware of the nature of our thoughts, whether they're peaceful or disturbing, what's perhaps motivating them. And as we learn Buddhist teachings, which are really like a mirror for our own daily life's experience and a mirror for our own mind, we begin to become more aware of what our thoughts are. We can see them as thoughts of love or thoughts of acceptance or thoughts of patience, or we can see them as thoughts of judgment or thoughts of attachment or thoughts of anger. We begin to notice what these various kind of waves of thought are. Sometimes it's described as our mind is like water with lots of bubbles in it. So our mind, like the clear sky, has lots of clouds. We can also say like our mind is like clear water that has lots of bubbles in it. And from our deepest level of mind, there's lots of kind of bubbles of thought that are always coming up. Sometimes there's lots. Sometimes they're very relaxed and there's not too many. You know, but we have all of this kind of mental activity, and it's very useful to become aware of ourselves, right? In this way, to become aware of our own mind so that we can choose our thoughts. We can choose the ways of thinking that are most beneficial for us and for other people. And then we can stay away from those trains of thought, which we can see are disturbing and kind of take us down a road of saying or doing something that perhaps in later we might have to apologize for or make up for, or we would regret personally, you know? So mind training is so wonderful because it gives us choice and freedom over how we're thinking, over the direction we are going in our life. Again, I'm not saying that is easy. That's why it's a practice. And some days are harder than others, but it becomes easier over the course of time as we use the meditation regularly and become, you know, more self-aware in this way. So in terms of meditating, and I'll bring this up again at the end of the class, but in terms of meditation regularly, we don't necessarily need a whole lot of time. Now, it's nice to maybe go take a weekend or do a retreat and go a little bit more deeply, okay, into the practice and find something different in that experience, kind of different spiritual experience. But day by day or week by week, we don't need to have so much. We can have the right amount for us. And in the beginning, at our centers, we'll often encourage people 10 or 15 minutes every day. If you're new to the practice, just 10 or 15 minutes. We're just going to get comfortable with it. Again, in the beginning, it may feel hard to sit still for 10 minutes. Okay, fine. So first 10 minutes, we're just getting comfortable kind of being. Just comfortable breathing and being and sitting still. And the more comfortable we get with that, then we're going to find this is enjoyable. This is really good. 15 minutes, 20 minutes, 25 like this. And we'll organically develop our practice where it's a part of our life that just fits, as opposed to thinking, how am I going to fit in like a 45-minute meditation thing? Because I already have got this thing and this thing and this thing. So just start off comfortably or gradually. Fit it into your life, whether it's morning or evening or what have you. But that consistency will build, right? And then we will find the effects of the practice. And I'll guarantee you that without this, it will be hard without that time that we're putting in to just meditation gently, but over the course of time, consistently, without that, it will be impossible to have that freedom of choice over our own mind that is so appealing. We won't have the ability to detach from our thoughts enough to see them and make choices about them. We'll just be so much caught up in the waves of them. So there's lots of Buddhist teaching and ideas, and they're all very good, and they can help us in our ways of thinking and approaching. But if we don't develop the actual practice of meditation, we're not really getting out of these teachings what we can. We're not getting really the experience of being able to train our mind and choose our thoughts. So I'm saying this to just encourage you in the practice of meditation to find the joy of that, to find the enjoyment of it, to find the peace of it, kind of in the rhythms of your life, and build that gradually over the course of time. You will not regret it. And there will come a time where you think, how did I ever live without this? You'll look back and go, whoa. I was an insane person before. Now I feel a little bit more sane. Okay. We'll see that. Of course, it's 6 months or so, a year, and so forth. So of all the thoughts that we can have, all these different bubbles that can come up, or the waves on the ocean, the clouds in the sky, within the Buddhist teachings, it's explained that the most destructive, the most harmful, or the biggest obstacle to our practice of love is what's called self-cherishing. There's a little bit of a term here, self-cherishing. It's the biggest obstacle, the biggest obstructive thought, okay? It prevents our love, it increases our unhappiness and so forth. We've got to look at this obstacle so we can see how messed up it is, so that we can be determined to overcome it, okay? So self-cherishing, what does self-cherishing mean? So generally we could say that self-cherishing means selfishness. I think we all understand that, selfishness. When we have this selfishness, it is an obstacle and obstruction to our love. They're diametrically opposed. Love, which is about being able to give happiness to others, to cherish others, or we feel warm and close and so forth. We are supportive of empathy. We feel connected. Self-cherishing is in opposition to this and takes us out of all of that beauty. It takes us out of all of that joy, out of that space of harmony and connection and so forth. So self-cherishing can also be explained as the thought that's thinking, I'm important, but while neglecting other people. Not just thinking I'm important, just thinking I'm important is not necessarily self-cherishing, that my health is important, you know, that my freedom is important. Just thinking that in general is not necessarily selfish, right? It's not self-cherishing. But when we think I'm important, more important than other supremely important, supremely precious me, whereby We look down on others, we disregard them, or we further neglect them, right? That is self-cherishing. And it is a massive, massive, massive problem. Maybe we also can think of it as ego. This is another general term. We'll understand self-cherishing is kind of a term we use within contemplative Buddhism, but ego, we get it, right? When there is this I, there's this self that's in the middle, right? And we relate to the desires and wishes of the self as supreme and more important, as superseding others, this ego that's kind of crowding out other people. We get that. That is a main obstacle to our happiness, a main obstacle specifically to our love. The bigger our ego is, or this sense of I, me, and mine is, the harder it is going to be to genuinely love others and develop the kind of meaning and relationships, develop the harmony, to develop the ease that we want. So we really, it's like taking ourselves out of the center, right? Taking ourselves out of the middle of it all to reduce our self-cherishing, to really start to take ourselves in a healthy way out of the equation more and more and more. So how can we understand the faults of self-cherishing? How do we look? We need to look at this mindset, this obstacle, to become thoroughly convinced that it's like poison, and to kind of clear up any confusion that we might have, like how is it related to love or caring for myself, fulfilling my needs, and so being happy. What's that relationship? So we clear up the confusion and see what it is clearly, and then begin to move beyond it, get it out of the way. For as long as we think that we need self-cherishing, we're not going to be kind of determined or make that decision to overcome that obstacle in our life. So you need to be really, really clear. It's a little bit like, maybe it's a really not good analogy, I don't know, but if we have an enemy and we want to deceive them, we need to clearly identify who our enemy is, because otherwise you might deceive somebody else and get it all wrong. We need to know very clearly what self-cherishing is so that we can gradually become free from it. Okay, so how harmful is this? There's two ways in which we can look at this. We can look at the cause and the basis. So I'm using the teachings in this book, The New Eight Steps to Happiness, The Buddhist Way of Loving Kindness. I'm using the explanations given in here as the basis for tonight's class. And I'll read a little bit, but it explains this kind of, there's this presentation. There's how self-cherishing is detrimental in the cause of suffering from the point of view of the karmic cause. There's also the basis, how this mind, this way of thinking or operating, is the foundation for miscontent, discouragement, depression, like self-pity and so forth. Okay, so from the karmic point of view, just quickly, I'm not going to spend too much time on this, but from the karmic point of view, so when we think about negative karma, this is harmful action, right? Harmful action. Maybe we've said some hurtful things to someone out of the motivation of anger, you know? Maybe we want to make them feel lesser or something like this. Or maybe just in the craziness of our ego, we're not even are kind of unaware of these motivations, but we get angry and we do these things. So we are motivated in unkind, harmful ways. So we engage in some harmful speech, okay? We can see that this harmful speech has come from anger. And where does that come from? I, me, mine. We felt that maybe our views, our ideas are so important, and we feel challenged and therefore angry as a result of feeling challenged. This is just one way of explaining, you know? So then from this strong self-cherishing comes our retaliation, anger, some harmful speech. Okay, so then as a result of this, what happens? We've created the karma then to have difficult relationships in the future. So this is Buddhist teaching, the karmic cycle. What we kind of put out there is going to come back to us. I think we all understand this karmic cycle in general. What we're going to put out there is going to come back. So if we put this negativity out, this create this bad karma, at some point it's going to come back. And what's going to happen is it's going to result and having a very similar experience coming at us, where someone is motivated by their self-cherishing and anger. And that's coming back to us. That's the karmic return of our own action. Okay? Or maybe we have difficult communications with other people. Like, it's just not easy. The result is some negative karma from our negative speech. Okay? Or maybe we're very easily hurt. You know, some people are very, very easily hurt. Where other people can just kind of brush things off more easily. This can be understood as a karmic result of harmful speech. Because with our harmful speech, we've hurt other people. Maybe we've pierced their kind of sensibilities, caused them to feel afraid or so forth. So they've had this mental experience, mental pain, right? So the karmic return is that in the future, in some future time, later in this life or future lives, then we can find that experience for ourselves. Very easy to feel hurt. But it's the karmic return. Now, if we understand past and future lives, then we can see that what we are experiencing now, good, bad, indifferent, is a karmic return. And what we're doing now will create a karmic return for our future selves. Okay? So the teachings on the karmic cycle are really core to Buddhism. And we can often think, I want to be kind to my future self. I'll be kind to my future self by creating good karma now. Because this cycle is how things work. The cycle of cause and effect is basically science. And cause and effect. Okay? So if we think about our experiences and the karmic relationship, we can trace misfortune, we can trace difficult communication and relationships, we can trace this back to the original cause of the self-cherishing mind. There's this loop, this negative like feedback loop that comes from selfishness. So maybe karma, I'm not so sure, past, future lives, doesn't matter, just think about it. What are the ways in which we witness karma in our life? What are the ways in which we understand karma, and how does self-cherishing relate to that? Okay. So this is kind of the big picture view. And if we understand and get a feeling for this karmic experience, we're going to feel pretty determined to not act out of self-cherishing. We're going to feel like, this is an issue. Okay, I don't want that negative karma. I don't want it. I don't want to create it anymore, so forth. So thinking about the karmic cycle will give us some wisdom and determination to move against our self-cherishing mind, to let go of ourself and attachment to our wishes, so forth.
If you feel inspired by this podcast, then dive deeper into timeless wisdom of modern Kadampa Buddhism by following the link in the episode description. We look forward to reconnecting with you in the next episode of Kadampa Podcasts.